Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and every week I am really honored to share the microphone with really interesting people. Now, these are people who are entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, they may be authors, speakers, web developers, anybody who has a great business venture or, you know, a business that they have created kind of from nothing, as so many of us have. And these are people who are excited to freely share their business wisdom, their tips, and their actionable advice. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. And today I welcome Nikita Thigpen to the show. She is a licensed clinical social worker and balance and relationship advisor who took the best of her education, aptitude, and experience as a barrier breaker and founded ThigPro Balance and Relationship Management Institute, which was created to unlock passion, unleash innovation, and maximize profit, all of those things entrepreneurs need. So as the author of the forthcoming book, Selfish, a sought-after speaker and podcast host, she has set her daily intention to empower and motivate the willing, and that's important, the willing to balance all that matters. And in this interview with me today, she is going to share a lot of advice and a lot of tips about creating a strong work-life balance. We all struggle with that, especially female entrepreneurs. We kind of think we're super women. We are, but I think we take it to an unhealthy extreme. So, yes, you can have it all, and Nikita is going to show us today. So, oh, and by the way, you can connect with her on LinkedIn and Twitter. The links are in the show notes. Good morning, and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm so glad you're here.
I am, too. Thank you so much, Denise, for welcoming me. I'm excited this morning.
I am too, because you're talking about the things that we all struggle with. And, you know, this is not a gender thing, but I do find just through observation that, you know, women tend to take on maybe a bit more because we're nurturers, we're caregivers, you know, we are trying to balance everything and it wears us out. So this is a big, big topic for me and I can't wait to hear what you have to say.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the reality is, although every human being walking the face of this earth is balancing life, some kind of money-making opportunity, whether that's a full-time position, a career, a business, a hustle, something that they're juggling in addition to whatever family responsibilities or dreams they have, all those things are, you know, just maybe four of the core things that everyone is throwing around in the air some kind of way. Women typically have a lot more, to say the least, that they are throwing in the air as well, because we're volunteers, we're PTA moms, we're aunts, we're sisters, we're mothers, we're daughters, and there are so many other responsibilities. The list can go on for days. And for some people, there's multiple hats that they have to wear because of a lack of male relationship that they may have as a helper in making sure that they meet every opportunity for success that they can.
It can be tricky. I know. Trust me. I know. Listen, before we get too far into that, please tell the audience a bit more about yourself that I may have missed in the intro.
Yeah, absolutely. My story pretty much comes from a space of believing that there are way too many people who are out here living a story that I broke free from, and I want to help them. There are some people who are listening to this radio show right now. There are others that may be out there in a windowless place in a room working hard, doing what they normally do on a day-to-day basis and just kind of staying to the grind. But those people are out there. They're mostly bold women, and a few are brave men, which is something I always like to say, because there are some men who are struggling with the same thing that I did. Their commonality is that they are brilliant people, unapologetically brilliant people, but they're also very unbalanced. And many of them are trapped in a box and really suffocating under a mask of conformity and outdated norms and limitations. A lot of those private expectations are really their own. You know, the I woulda, coulda, shoulda. You know, I was going to be a doctor. I should have been a lawyer. I should have married different. You know, whatever the woulda, coulda, shouldas are that may be a part of their story. You know, I don't have that particular tether in common. I've married my life partner, my soulmate. But there are definitely some things that were private expectations that I failed at keeping my own intention, mainly because I was no longer passionate about it. It was what I would consider an extinguished passion that started to be really laced with toxins, Denise, to be fully honest. And a lot of those stories that are out there no longer serve those people the same way my story stopped serving me. It started to minimize my potential and smother my own brilliance. So those are the people that I help through our Balance and Relationship Institution and the various different programs that we have, the Dreamers Blueprint and, you know, corporate leadership programs and all of that. We're really trying to make a space, a time, and an opportunity for people to take everything that they have, their skills, their talents, and their gifts, and find that sweet spot in the midst of that and propel forward in the place that they want to be and not just from a space of need. So that's why I say I empower the willing. I don't want to help anyone who's not ready to be helped and who's not willing to go forward through the process that they have to literally transform their mindset and their methods to get to everything that matters for them.
Now, people don't necessarily have to hit rock bottom to be willing to change, right? It can just be that kind of death by a thousand paper cuts where you just say, I can't stand it anymore. I got that way. It took me the longest kind of time to figure out that I am a complete and total introvert. I would be happy on an island. I really would. And, I mean, I tried to conform to live among other people and, you know, do all of that. It didn't work for me. And it not only did it work, it failed spectacularly. And I couldn't really figure out why until I said, you know, I'm happiest alone. And once I figured that out, it was like, oh, it was a whole new life for me. And I can't even begin to tell you how difficult it was because you have to kind of walk out of society's norm. But I had to.
Absolutely.
It was either that or die.
Yeah. No, it's like the air being sucked out of a room, right?
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. It's I'm not shy, and I'll tell anybody this. I'm not shy, and I don't dislike people. But I'm good for about 59 and three-quarter minutes. That's it. I have to go. I'm done. So I have my little timer. I have my car keys. I'm out the door. But, you know, once I gave in to that, not gave in to, but once I understood it and said this is how I must live my life to reach any kind of potential at all, things changed dramatically and rapidly. And I'm sure you find that with people you coach as well.
I do, and I'm super laughing at you and with you, by the way. I just did a TV show on Monday morning saying the same thing. I have doses is what I call it. I take my family in doses. I take my kids in doses. I take people in doses, right? For you, it's 59 minutes and, you know, a few seconds. Like, that's the
three-quarter minutes.
A three-quarter minute that you give
right,
out.
That's important.
It is, but that's how you create your custom fit balance. You know, you've decided that instead of just giving out this, you know, overextended yes that stretches you way past your breaking point, that makes you leave a space exhausted and drained and regretting the otherwise maybe good conversation or good energy that started out in that first, you know, 40 minutes or so of that opportunity to engage with whoever that person or those people were, you started to stretch too thin and you said, you know what, I need to pull the rubber band back before it starts to tear, shatter, and break. Let me figure out what's the sweet spot for me in all of those areas, but starting with the one I can control the most, which is setting a limit on it, you know, giving yourself a dose. And I tell that to clients and prospective clients all the time. You have to learn to say no, even to yourself. No, I'm not going to make this other person or this other opportunity extend itself beyond the parameters of that which makes the most sense for me, because I'm going to walk away with nothing left to give to the things that really matter and to the people who really matter, because I just gave everything to this person or this situation to make them feel good about, I don't know, just talking over coffee. Well, how about let's keep it at 59 minutes and set the tone going in. So, yes.
And this is true in business relationships as well, I find, because, mm-hmm. and listen, I don't have a problem with saying no. My mother insists that my first word was not mama or dada. It was no, and she said I meant it. So
I love that.
Apparently I was a little badass from birth, apparently.
That's a hashtag.
Yeah. Well, and the only reason I can say that is because in another interview, somebody identified me as that, and I went, ooh, I like that. And it's not something I gave to myself, but I went, oh, that I recognize that. That's me. But the thing mm-hmm. is, we all, and so many of us work online these days. We may be working in a brick-and-mortar situation, but many of us are also working online as well in one, mm-hmm. you know, one version of our business or another. And honestly, what I find with a lot of people, and I'd love to hear your advice on this, is that people will often take on clients or prospects that are not a good fit for them.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us why that's a bad idea.
Oh, absolutely. And this is perfect timing for some other conversations I have coming up for presentations. It's filling that space of desperation because you're really afraid of a deserted, dry place. When you think about it, for business owners, and I'll specifically, I was going to pull in, you know, people who were VPs and executives, but I'll just stick with, you know, entrepreneurs and business owners for a moment. People who have to kill their own meat in order to eat, right? Many times we'll just kill anything because we're afraid of the refrigerator going bare. Even though the refrigerator may have something in it, there may be food already in the oven that's prepared to come on the table, but there's this space of lack and limitation that's constantly in the back of our mind. It's like a tape that's playing. You know, if you don't get as much as you need when you can get it, while you can get it, you're going to come into this place of famine. So you have to stock up and, you know, prepare for hibernation. Like, we're constantly preparing for lack. Instead of making room for abundance, we're preparing for lack. So many of us don't look for the opportunity of no enough to literally make room to participate in the yes that we should have and that we deserve to have and that we were destined to have, because we're constantly feeling like, oh, I got to stock up, I got to stock up, I got to stock up. So you start accepting, you know, clients who are not a good fit personality-wise. You start accepting clients who have a lot of demands that are outside your normal customization requisites that you have maybe established for your brand and, you know, what the integrity of what your foundation for your business is, because you're thinking, well, you know what, this, you know, they know a lot of people, they could refer me to another, you know, you take reasons and turn them into the excuse of why you accepted and made desperate decisions typically. And it's not always just financially linked. Sometimes it's because it gives you a sense of validation that your business or you yourself has more credibility, because now you can say, I don't just have five clients, I have a dozen clients. You know, whatever that validation is that we're seeking to kind of hide the shame of being in that place that we would pray we either never have to go back to or are afraid of going to, because someone somewhere said you aren't able to do this. Why would you do that, Denise? Why would you start a business? Are you serious in this economy? I don't know. Sounds like a good side hustle, but shouldn't you still stay connected to your 9-to-5? You know, there's always someone else who's living their fear and projecting it on you through what you're doing, and some of us absorb other people's fears. As a matter of fact, I'll be as bold enough to say all of us absorb other people's fears to a point. It may not always be specifically in business and maybe in your relationships and the decisions that you're not making, but it's connected to inhibitors that hold you back from moving forward in your future.
I have to say, when I first started my business, oh gosh, in 2000, 2001, I still owned a business. I still was working in a brick and mortar. But when mm-hmm. I wanted to say, I can't do this anymore, I'm worn out, I hate what I'm doing, this, I just can't do it anymore, I got that argument from my now former husband. Oh, we need the many. We need the, no, we don't. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I just said, listen, I'm going to give it 6 months. And at the end of 6 months, if I haven't found something, I will, you know, get a job. Truth is, I was lying to him. I had no intentions getting a job. I had every intention of making it work, and by golly, it did, because I was so determined to listen to what I knew to be right and not anyone else. And I'm very grateful for that lesson. He was right. You can't fault his logic. I mean, we were living on one paycheck, you know, one income and putting the rest away. But he was very concerned about losing that other income and having to just live on one. I knew I could do it. So I just shut out the noise and the chatter, and I just did it. A lot of people can't do that, though, because yeah. there's a lot of resistance coming from other people. So when that happens, what are some of your tips to maybe get people to stand back and say, do I believe in this or I don't believe in it? What should I do? How do you kind of counsel people through that situation?
Absolutely. Well, some of it is, you know, literally a filter. And I talk about filters in various different ways, and some I do believe we'll get to a little bit later. But for that particular area of filtering what gets in there, what gets to stick, and what you can, you know, try to keep out the majority of, is being clear who you have around you in the first place. You know, for you, in your particular incident, it was a very intimate person, someone who was up close and personal, it was your spouse. For many people, that is the case. It's the closest people to you, your mom, your sister, your friend, you know, adult children, young children, you know, maybe because of their demands. You know, mommy, you can't go to work today. You have to be here with me. The guilt that kind of sprays off of those conversations or those statements that people say to you, and having filters literally around you as you're girded up in the reality and the truth of who you are. A lot of that is being clear that you need to be fueled with good stuff every single day. You can't take one vacation, Denise, you know, 4 months ago or a year ago and say, oh, it was the best thing ever, and we had the most positive days, and I was affirmed by the people that I walked by that I would be great one day, or that I'm great at what I'm doing, and to keep going, and think that that's enough to hold you up when you're constantly under attack from, you know, other words, including yourself, including the things that are going around in your mind, because we go in our heads, I can't do this, I can't hit this deadline, it's too much, I don't have enough employees yet, I'm not big enough, I can't go over that contract, you know, all those, that little mind play that's happening. And then you have people who are hitting you with logic, to your point, you know, listen, your destiny and love and your intention is not paying your electric bill. You know, the positive affirmation is not paying your bank for your mortgage or your rent or your car note or any of that. I totally understand. So you do have to pay attention to logic, but logic should be leveraged. It should not be the thing that hinders you. So when you create the plans, which is what I talk to our VIP private coaching clients about all the time, when we do your strategic plans, your blueprint for your business to create the doors of opportunities for others to walk through, you have to make sure that you looked at the logic behind what you were doing, not just to help people, because that's all great, but help, again, being a helper in and of itself is not paying your bills. So how do we do this? How do we make sure that the value that you are going to bring, that I know you can bring, that we can package right together, is validated, so to speak, by the right price point, so that logically you only need X number of clients to make sure that your electric, your car note, you know, your meat and potato bills, the things that are core protein, so to speak, in your refrigerator are in there, and everything else is the overflow that can become a part of your give, that you can give time to mentor others that may not be able to pay you, because now your meat and potato is covered. You don't have to take desperate situations to try to put really, really low price points or to make all these concessions to accept things and overgive and overdo in ways that really are stretching you to the point that you're about to pop. I'm not talking about the over-delivering that you should just give as good customer service, but I mean the over-extension that people are really demanding from you that go beyond your bandwidth at that time. And with that said, you have to set it up from the gate. You know, what are my prices? If I think I need 100 people just for me to pay, I'm going to just make up a number, $1,500 a month in rent, then what do I need to do to attain 100 actual clients? Well, that probably means that I need a minimum, a very, very minimum of 300 opportunities to connect with people to get maybe, and I'm, you know, literally under-exaggerating that number, to get the 100 paid clients. So what do you have to do to get 300 opportunities to engage with people? Well, when you look at that and you see that that's not the space that you're in, maybe you don't have the systems in place to connect with 300 people at a time to get your 100 people, then let's pull back, you know, let's stop for a second, pull back, and let's look at our packages and look at the value that's offered. What value are you bringing to people, and how much is the value of what change and outcome you're bringing to their life, their business, their relationships, whatever it is, whatever way you serve them? What is that price point? Oh, you mean that thing was $10,000 in itself? Well, why are you selling it for $7? Or, you know, I'm making up ridiculous numbers on purpose, but, you know, why
no,
is it so different?
You're right, though. People do grossly undervalue their skills and their hard skills and their soft skills, and it's a big, big deal. So keep on going. I mean, you're speaking my language.
I know, because this is what you do, right, with other people and really helping them organize it. And with that, you know, you have to look at the price point and say, like, okay, well, if the value is, in this, you know, kind of lewd example, a $10,000 valued package of one of three of the packages I have, and maybe that is the lowest package you have. That's, that value is $10,000, and it's technically the baby package of what you give, then maybe let's readjust how many people should you need to, you know, really provide that opportunity to make sure your meat and potato protein is covered. Maybe that $10,000 package needs to at least be $2,000. Just, you know, again, making up kind of loot numbers as a minimum. And the overgive was the $8,000 in overflow value, but $2,000 definitely covered your meat and potato. And that, you know, if you only sell, so to speak, four of them, you've, what, tripled your margins in terms of what you need for your logic self, the folk that were giving you some real things to think about, say, okay, well, you know what? The hard package isn't really even that $2,000 package. The hard package was the $50,000 package. So that's the one that I can put some different energy into from that perspective when it comes to mustering up and pushing past, you know, maybe my confidence or my second guessing of myself, my inability. So we have to really look at, is your strategy matching your dream? Are you really building something underneath of yourself that will stabilize you and allow you to shift the paradigm and propel yourself forward to whatever it is and wherever it is you're trying to go? Or are you just trying to be busy and saying that you have, you know, I have a business, I'm a business owner, and feeling like that detachment from the corporate world gives you a different validation inside the corporate world to say, you know, when you're inundated and you're 9-to-5, you can look at your boss, you know, even if you kind of mumble it to yourself and say, that's why I have something else outside of here. Okay, well, is your something else outside of here really going to allow you to live there? Or will it always just be something else that you have to balance because you haven't created the right platform underneath? So typically when people are struggling with those belief systems, I say maybe your belief system, the lack thereof, the inadequacy that you're feeling, has some validity to it. You know, there's some truth to what people can tell you, but is all of it truth? Like, let's look at what lessons we have learned from the husbands and the sisters and the mothers and the friends and the neighbors of the world who have said, you can't do this. Well, why did they say you can't
do this? And ourselves. I mean, honestly, in this, I'm dead serious about this. I catch myself doing what I think, I call it stinking thinking. And I will talk to myself in a way that, honestly, if anybody said this, half the things I say to myself on occasion, I'd pop them right in the head in Walmart. I mean, there would be a girl fight or a boy. I would get nasty with somebody, but I have no problem getting nasty with myself every now and then. So we have to really, you know, be very cognizant of what we're saying to ourselves as well.
Exactly. And that brings me back to that fuel point. We don't balance enough. We don't give ourselves enough permission to pause, to refuel, so that we can fill up enough and be ready to, you know, walk into those spaces. There's going to be attacks that come from everywhere, even with good intentions, right? You know, your mom has a great intention, or your sister, or someone, they had a great intention. When I said, well, Nikita, you know, did you think about the kids' tuition change that's going to happen in 2 years when so-and-so goes to high school? It's like, you know what? That was a good intention reminder. They weren't trying to be negative and pull me down. But did I have enough fuel in me that says, yes, I can do this? Yes, I will do this. Yes, I am going to do it. Do I have enough in me? Did I take enough miniature, you know, 10-minute timeouts for myself? Or am I working in a space and calling it necessary of having 18-hour days, not taking bathroom breaks, not eating correctly, living off of comfort food or whatever I can rip open out of a packet or out of a vending machine and saying, oh, this is just the life of an entrepreneur, and then wondering why I don't have energy to fight off the energy zappers, why I don't have energy to even catch myself when I'm falling, sinking, going, you know, being pulled into that negative, stinking thinking place. Well, part of it is because I'm not treating myself right. How do you expect you to take care of you if you're refusing to and then saying this is just the way it is? There's a problem with that. So the priority has to be, and people have a hard time with this word, but I live by it. The priority has to be you being selfish enough to love yourself first and more than anything else at that moment when you need to refuel, so that you can be in a position to be a firefighter tomorrow or in the next hour. We're all, you know, going through the storm and fighting fires along the way. But if you don't have the right equipment, if you don't have the right stamina and endurance, how much of that do you think you're going to be able to get through? How many storms do you think you're going to be able to take before something takes you out and you end up in the hospital or having a stressful
moment? Oh,
exactly. You know?
I call it healthy selfishness. And the word no is part of my healthy selfishness. I mean, I will, you know, I'll think about it. But here's my thing. If I tell you no twice, the second one was a mere courtesy. When I say no, I mean no. The second time was a courtesy. There is no third time. And people, I mean, when they come up across that, they're like, oh, you meant it. Well, yeah, I meant it. It's always a surprise, but you have to exercise what I call healthy selfishness. You have to have those boundaries, and you have to police them. If you don't, you're doing exactly what you just described. You're ripping open a package in the middle of the night of something salty and greasy, and you're just going, oh, gosh, I'll drink water to combat it tomorrow. It's always tomorrow, isn't it, with us?
Yeah.
So once you decide that you're not going to do that anymore, things change, and they change in a big, big way. I would love for you to give some tips about how people can take that mindset shift. I had to do it. One of the things that I have done is that, I mean, I'm one of those people, Nikita, my mom sent me a birthday card, that, and I know y'all have seen it, it's out there, but, you know, be the kind of woman that when your feet hit the floor, the devil says, oh, crap, she's awake. My mother sent me that. And truly, that is me. I hit the floor running. I don't have to, you know, I don't have to, you know, get up and stretch and drink coffee. I'm like, boom, and off I go. I've had to slow down, deliberately slow down and take, and I can do this because of my office is in my home. I live alone. And I can take 2 hours in the morning for what I call spiritual practices, which means that I'm outside dawn a little bit before, right after. I've got this gorgeous backyard. It's got a zen-like quality back there. And I'm out there with my iPad. I might be doing yoga. I might be tea-tapping. I might be reading something by Tony Robbins. I may be talking to my spirit guides. I don't know what I'm doing. But I spend a solid 2 hours out there just kind of grounding myself, figuring out what I'm going to do for the day, what I need to focus on, and being very, very grateful. And I'm telling you, that practice in the morning, that 2 hours or an hour if I have to scale it back, I never skip it, because if I do, I feel it, and it's not a good feeling. Things kind of unravel for me.
Absolutely.
So if you've got some
you described your power up routine, which is exactly what I talk about.
Oh, that's
people.
A good way to put it.
Yes,
I never thought of
your
it like
power
that
up.
I just wrote that down.
Yeah, Denise's power up, like you're powering up to take over the world, you know, in that day, in that hour. Like, you're preparing yourself, you're girding yourself and guarding yourself
mm-hmm.
against the attacks. You know, that's part of the process. The part that people forget, you know, because, you know, we get focused with the 5 a.m. club. You know, I ran a 5 a.m. club for a while. I'm an early riser. It's part of my life. I have that same kind of 2 to 3 hour period where I'm powering up with the various different ways that I have to get out my creative energy before actual work starts. But for me, my power up routine is totally hindered if my power down routine is not efficient. So the way that you get yourself ready for bed is just as important as the way that you wake up in the morning and hit the floor running, right? If you were to have, and I'm not sure if you're an early riser or an evening innovator, those people who are like at 1 o'clock in the morning. You're both? Oh, my gosh.
I'm both. I wake up very early. I only sleep 3 to 6 hours a night and never in a row. I cat nap.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been very good at sleeping, and I'm loving what you're saying about, you know, putting yourself to bed, because I have a genuine problem going to sleep. I'm not an insomniac at all. Just my little monkey brain never shuts down. And I'm just, you know, working, thinking, it's like, oh, geez. And, you know, I'm up and running to the computer, and I've had to train myself. No, it can wait. It can wait.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, what, yeah, but I find that, you know, I'm clocking along really well until about maybe 1 in the afternoon, and then I have to walk off. I'm exhausted. I'm drained.
Mm-hmm.
Then I come back, you know, again, and then about 9 o'clock at night, I'm like, woohoo, second breath. So I have learned to work with my rhythms. Whatever works for me is what I do.
Yeah, your custom fit balance. Like, literally, that is your work-life balance, right?
Right.
That schedule would never work for someone else. Yeah.
No, it took me years, though. And the only reason I can do it, honestly, is because I live alone. It would be very difficult to vacuum at 3 in the morning with somebody else in the house, and I'm known to do that.
Oh, yeah, you should be married to my husband, because that's him. He's an evening innovator, so if he feels like it's time to, you know, do something, like, listen, dude, I'm up in an hour, stop it.
Right, I know.
But, no, you actually just hit a couple of good points. So I want to back up for a second. You mentioned getting out of your head, saying when it's time to wind down before you could even attempt to implement a power down. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That happens with everyone, especially for people who are problem solvers. Would you define yourself as a problem solver?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I have leadership skills, which means that I'm the oldest of a whole mess of kids. I'm not bossy. I have leadership skills, damn it.
Yeah, I'm going to say sure, yes, leadership.
Okay, fine.
No,
I'm bossy.
No, I'm the oldest of five, so
power.
I get that.
Yeah.
I totally get that. I'm sure my siblings would not say it's the leader in me that's coming out. But, no, to your point, it's, you know, a lot of those things for you as a doer, because you are a doer, and there, you know, everything starts with a dream, and it's all fine, but there are some people who are great at dreaming. Some people are great at being the motivational, believing type. Some people are great at planning and creating plans and strategies. And some people are at their maximum when they're doing, in a good way. Like, that is your zone of genius when you're doing. So it's hard to not do and do effectively. And, you know, you obviously have to have all of those other skills below that, all those different stages, but your maximum as a doer makes it a little bit difficult for you to kind of turn off the engine, right? If your brain is on, you got in the flow, you hit a point of needing to stop and get some gas, which is around that 1 o'clock for you, like, okay, I need to, you know, I got to take care of this engine, I got to do what I need to do. And when you come back, at whatever time you come back and that engine gets turned back on, it's very difficult to stop the flow, but there is a way for you to minimize it so the engine doesn't have to go full throttle at that time, so that your gauge can be shifted. So the main thing you
want to
do
up is not a problem. Powering down is a big problem.
No, I
don't
totally get it.
I don't have an off button.
And, well, part of it is because you have to have an off one that works for your flow, right? So if you got a lot of stuff revving up in there, then you can't just have a, you know, all right, Denise, I need you to just turn your phone over and meditate for 10 minutes. That's not going to work for you. That will drive you insane if you were to go from 60 to 0 flat. It's not going to work. What would work for you is if you utilize your rev up to literally slowly kind of peg yourself down and come down notches at a time. So perhaps as someone who's constantly thinking and your engine is constantly running, you need to leverage maybe a recording on your smartphone if you have something that's, you know, bedside available. So it should be out of your office space. You have to have visual and auditorial and kinetic things that move you from your quote-unquote workspace. Even though you work from home, I know we're tempted to work in every area of our home, but you have to move to a space that is not associated with work. If you don't have that space because you do work everywhere in your home, then you have to create that space. For me, it's literally my bathroom. My bathroom is my reminder space, my master bedroom bathroom. Mm-hmm.
Really? Bathtub? That's once I'm in
the
tub. Oh, yeah. That's where I do my quiet thinking. Yeah, it's a quiet thinking. I'm still thinking, but it's lower down. It's like my body pressure, my blood pressure is lowered, and I understand. For me, it's the backyard.
Yeah.
When I need to just step out, I go outside with my dog and I watch her chase squirrels. And
mm-hmm.
It's always for me, it's outside, no matter the weather. I have a covered porch, front and back, and then I have patios and courtyards. So I have multiple areas where I can just go to get out of the house. And I will not take my iPad out there after my power up session in the morning. It's out there in the morning. But when I'm out there for the rest of the time, unless I'm going to be reading a book, the iPad stays in the house. And that's deliberate, by the way.
But see how you do that deliberately in the morning? Because you have a lot of power and control over your morning. And then you just kind of loosey-goosey with it at night, right? Because it's become your habit.
I have no control at night.
Right. You're just like, you know. And that's because most of your energy has been focused, which is totally okay up until this point, because now you have a different way. You've been focused on making sure that you protect that morning time. Now you have to do the same with the way you kind of turn the volume down at night. So I would suggest that you move from your workflow when you're ready. You know, when you're about an hour close to your time, whatever that time is, I know your time is different than the typical schedule. So let's say I'm just going to make up a time, at 10:30, and you know that normally you would
midnight.
Probably go until midnight, right? So about 10:30, 11 o'clock, move to the outside, whatever the outside is for you, the enclosed porch, and take the least stimulating work you have. So maybe that's just the writing part, the content management part. Maybe it's, you know, something not connected to one of your computers, because I know your company does a lot with that. So something that's a little less stimulating than your other projects, that gets shifted to the outside, because when you hit that outside space, or what feels like an outside space, your volume is slowly turning down. It's not off, and it's not even close to off. It's just turning down. And then after about 45 minutes to an hour of that, so we're probably, about 11:30 now, we need to shift yourself literally away from whatever that was that you were doing, and you need to get ready to do your bath routine, you know, getting your candles ready, your water, your ice water, your lemon, whatever those things are. But remember, all five senses need to be involved.
You've been in my house. Where are you describing candles, water, Epsom salts?
Yes.
I swear you've been here. How did you know?
Well, that's probably because we're twinned-minded, because I do the same thing. But I use my shower more so than the tub. Our bathtub is where the kids are on that side, and it's just too much chaos. But
I have this wonderful spa tub, and it's a 6-foot spa tub. Oh, it's magic.
I
lower the lights. I light the candles, Epsom salts, you know, essential oils. I'm in heaven.
Yes, absolutely. No, that's me, but the shower version. And I have to know that when I hit that button, with all the prep that I do, getting my waters ready, getting my candles on, when I get all of that stuff in tone, my mind and my body, from the moment that I go to get the candles, the special candles that I use specifically for this, out of the cabinet, my mind is shifting to a space of we're about to wind down. It's not going to happen in 10 minutes, and I have about an hour before I'm really able to ease in, because like you, I'm a doer, so my mind there's a lot that has to be turned down, you know, slowly turned down, but still in a rhythmic way, So those candles mean something to me. Then I inhale the candle, just thinking, you know, smells good. But it's centering my body on the inside, that we're moving into that space. When I pour my water into my wine glass and I add my little slice of lemon or lime, like, I know that's very different than my power up routine when I'm putting it in a mason jar with a polka dot straw. You know, like, it's a very different experience from my power up to my power down. Yet I'm using what I know works to wind me down and wind me up in kind of a reverse order on purpose. And when I'm effective at it, and to your point earlier, every day you don't get 2 hours or 4 hours to do it because of priorities or projects or massive fires that need to be taken care of. But when you do it more often than not, you have the energy store to get you through those really off days where you weren't able to get to your, you know, your kind of ritual that stimulates you up and that also slowly brings you down. For parents that have young kids, they have to infuse what they're doing. They might not have a back porch opportunity, you know, for time, because back porch to kids means time to go play, and that's revving them up, and they're trying to rev them down so they can get their own rev down. So they have to infuse that. Make bath time a joint time of stimulating your mind and body to the point where you're saying, okay, when I put little Johnny into the tub, or I'm folding their clothes and getting them ready, or making their lunch, I'm also going to put some music into my ears that is stimulating for me in a way that kind of brings me down and reminds me, you know, we're almost there, we're almost there. It's like whispering through your sensory experience that you're creating that it's time to wind down with the action that you take, not just the words and not just because the alarm clock says midnight.
I'm sorry, that makes sense. I got distracted. My phone is ringing, and I thought I had it turned off. and I like what you're saying about sensory, because that is so important. I think that if we ignore that we are sensory beings, I think that's where we run into problems. And it's easy to just say, oh, you know, I just need to pull the turkey out of the freezer and thought. You know, I don't need to sit here and really think about my higher self or my higher powers, or I'm here to tell you, you do need to think about those things and you do need to be in touch with them. So what is your take on that?
Absolutely. I agree wholeheartedly. You know, you have senses for a reason, and they're not just to feel and explore the world. They're also to comfort you and to heal you. Mm-hmm. Our bodies can heal themselves if we give it the right nutrients and ingredients and opportunity to do that. That opportunity is connected to time to relax, time to restore ourselves, time to reconnect to the earth. You know, take off your socks, feel the floor that you paid for. You know, feel that hardwood floor or that beautiful shaggy carpet. You know, feel it underneath your toes. Don't just go, you know, running and hustling and moving so much that you don't give yourself an opportunity to even enjoy everything that you've worked really hard for, because that allows you to get into a space of being grateful for what you have and using your senses to be grateful for that. You know, touch your banister, touch the flowers, the herbs, buy some parsley from Produce Junction or a farmer's market, and just have those in glass mason jars around your house if you don't have a green thumb. Keep them fresh for a couple weeks and add them to your salad. You know, bring the experience of outside into your body. But be mindful of what you're bringing in. Make sure it's good stuff so you can connect and heal the inside, so your inside can make sure that your outside is ready to take over the world. It's extremely important.
It is. You know, I have a stiletto problem. I am a nerd in stilettos, and I have this. I might as well just say it. It looks like Nordstrom's threw up in my closet. I mean, I've got shoes and bags in there that I am happy to pair with Walmart jeans. I don't care. But, you know, I love my shoes. But when I'm outside, I'm kicking those things off and I'm curling my toes in the grass.
Mm-hmm.
I have to. It's just, I have to ground myself underneath my pecan trees. It's just how I operate.
Absolutely. And many of us should do that. You know, if you don't have a safe space outside, so to speak, where you feel comfortable enough, maybe your work environment is not suitable for that, there's other ways to do it. You know, when I worked at the hospital, I used to go into the bathroom when I would force myself to take a bathroom break, because we're talking 12-hour days. I would go into the bathroom, and because I'm a little bit of a germaphobe, I would put paper towel, because paper made from trees, I would put paper towel underneath my hands, and I would crinkle it up, and you know, like little balls, just so I could feel something that wasn't linoleum floors and waxed walls and sterile, sanitized, you know, the space that I was in was very anti what made me feel very comfortable in a regular, you know, on a regular basis. I would crumple them in my hands just so I could feel something, sometimes because it was a little bit of a, like a stress ball almost that I was creating from the paper towel. But then I would go into one of the larger stalls, like the handicapped stalls that were just wider that I could go in, and I would keep the paper towels under my hands and do push-ups off the door, like literally just to kind of work out and remind myself, get your heart rate going to a space where you want to control it, not allowing other people or situations to create an anxiety raise in your heartbeat, but let you control it. And I would literally like work my body up and warm it up on the inside to a point where I could control it. And that's why I'm sweating and disgusting, you know, when I'm leaving because I'm still at work. But just so that I could get into a space where I felt like I could now control and handle everything that was going on, especially considering the grief and the trauma and a lot of things we were dealing with. When you can't save someone physically, it really gets to you, you know, especially when you're in those environments. And many of us feel like that at home, when we can't save our marriages, or we can't save our siblings or our children from having certain experiences, or we can't save the clients that we work with from avoiding mistakes that you try to prime them and prepare them for to skip over or to hurdle through once they're in it, and you just can't save them. We absorb that as well, and that takes a toll on us as business owners, and especially as women, because we absorb everything as a part of our nurturing and birthing response. And then when we're ready to press something out, a new business, a new idea, a new opportunity to climb the career ladder, whatever it is that we're trying to press out now, it gets trapped in all that toxic stuff that we were absorbing, and it's now literally blocking our birthing canal of whatever we're trying to push out. And now we're fighting not just the world and the attacks that we were talking about earlier with people trying to plant seeds of how you can't do something, but now we're dealing with the toxicity thing that we've absorbed over time from other things that we just felt ashamed and guilty and angry about not being able to help. And now it's all trapping our dream, and it's keeping everything inside and making it really difficult to push past. And those contractions can be extremely brutal.
And I think that's why it's so important that you learn to ground yourself. Listen, I was guilty of jumping out of bed, brushing my teeth, feeding the cats, feeding the dog, and racing to my office. And then at the end of the day going, holy crap on a stick, I'm exhausted. How much did I get done? Oh, no. And then starting beating up on myself because I didn't get nearly enough done as I thought I should have. And it was just a vicious, vicious cycle. I mean, I built a whopping business, but the toll was great, let me tell you. So once I decided to, you know, follow the advice of several of my clients who have these grounding practices and rituals, and, you know, and I was following along, watching them grow, and I was helping them grow. I wasn't doing what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you have that aha moment where you smack yourself in the forehead. I finally smacked myself in the forehead and said, what are you doing, Denise? I mean, the information is right there. Why are you not, you're watching these people, you're so happy they're growing. Why are you still doing the same old crud that you've been doing all this time? And I just stopped. And I regrouped. And, you know, I went deeper within. And I started, you know, paying attention to the sensory part of myself, my intuition. And listen, I have a conversation with my subconscious every day, twice a day. Before I go to sleep, I will tell my self-conscious, you know, there might have been a sticky problem that I couldn't resolve, and I will just turn it over to my subconscious for review, and I promise you I have the answer when I wake up. The other thing is, first thing in the morning, I will tell my subconscious, I'm really issuing an order to my subconscious, and it is this: subconscious, you will only listen to my higher self, period.
Absolutely.
It's made a huge difference, huge, huge difference, because now I'm able to take a breath, calm down, stop, regroup, center myself, and then come back and go, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
Intuition is a fine friend to have if you pay attention.
Absolutely. And to your point, it was your method of being able to quiet down or maybe even stop that tape that was playing in the back of your mind and your subconscious. Those tapes that tell you it's okay for you to rest so much that you don't become productive. Not saying that that was your story, but in general, for many people, their permission to pause is the reason that they're not performing. You know, they're sitting on the couch too much. Other people are working so hard that they're at the opposite end of the continuum because they're working to keep that refrigerator full, right? Like they're like, no, I can't go into famine. I got to prepare for, you know, for the desperate dry places to come. I have to. And then they hit a wall where they're exhausted and can't absorb everything that they've stocked up, and now half of it's going bad. You know, like literally when you overbuy something thinking that you need all of it because you're literally afraid of famine. I'm not going to have enough food to feed these five people that are coming to my house, so you buy enough for 30. And then half the food goes bad, and you're like, well, why didn't, you know, what am I going to do with it? Why did you buy so much? Like, what were you thinking? And we do that with our time. We overspend our time in some areas and then underspend in the areas that are the most essential, the ones that keep us balanced in the way that is custom fit for ourselves. Not Judy next door, not John down the street, but what works for you. If you're afforded the opportunity to have a schedule, or you want to create a life that gives you the schedule where you can have 2 hours to power up and work really diligently and very productively up until 1 o'clock, and then pause and refuel and refocus and reconnect until 9 o'clock when you're ready to work, power up for another 3 hours or so in terms of your work performance, then that's the schedule that you have to prepare and strategize to get to. But many of us literally get stuck in that dream of, well, one day I'll do it. And they don't talk to their subconscious.
So it's tomorrow.
Right?
Right.
Yeah.
I'll procrastinate tomorrow. So the people who are listening to us, our audience now and in the future, because this will be downloadable, what are some steps that they can take to say, okay, they're making sense. I'm understanding what these ladies are telling me. How do I find those times? I mean, I'm busy. I have to, you know, drop off the kids. I've got to pick up this. Where do I find the energy, the wherewithal to find those times? Are there any steps they can take, maybe a notepad or, you know, it's hard to follow ourselves around. It is. It's difficult.
It is.
Because we're just so darn busy. And that's another thing, and I wanted to kind of point out the difference between being busy and actually accomplishing things. So it may be part of the same question. Did I lose you?
Yeah, you said a part of the same question, and then it paused.
Yeah, sorry
go
about
ahead.
That. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, oh, no, I lost her. Oh, no. Okay. So, I mean, does that make sense? Is it all part of the same question? I mean, how do we find the time? Because it took me a long time. I didn't just wake up knowing this.
No.
It wasn't knowledge. It came pre-programmed. I mean, I had to, you know, do the head slap and go, really, Denise? And then of course, I wandered around going, you know, bad Denise, stupid Denise. And, of course, I had to overcome that. But how do people kind of find where their times are?
Absolutely. Well, it's recognizing what's your take over the world time of day. And I ask clients that all the time. What time is your energy the highest? That's your work time. That's not your power-up routine time. That's the time you need to be in your flow. So if I were to look at my, you know, my former self when I was working in the hospital systems and as a clinician and doing all those things, we were on go mode by 10 o'clock. You know, of course, you know, the day started at 7, but we were on, in terms of our work hours, but we were on go mode, like in the flow, nothing was stopping us at 10 o'clock. And I realized that my takeover the world time of day was between 10 and 3. My energy is actually the highest at that time. So the most troubling challenges, the biggest problems for me that I would help other people with, those cases, I would schedule those clients, those marital couples, those family situations to come in during that time of day because I knew that I already had a few hours into my day. I was already warmed up. The injury was warm and I was ready to go. So you can even assess that by looking at where is your energy now. And, of course, it'll tweak and it'll change as your body gets healthier on the inside as we're able to mold you and grow you to those other places to really kind of recalibrate yourself. But just starting with the space that you're in right now, what's your takeover the role time of day? When you look at your busy, crazy, hectic, you know, more than a handful of balls in the air schedule, when are you in flow? And if someone actually said, hey, John, hey, Jill, let's take a lunch break together, we can, you wouldn't even want to stop because you're in flow. What time of day is that for you? And I know that can be a challenging thing if you're doing a type of work that you're not connected to, but you're clearly doing it also beyond the pay because it's supporting you. You're also doing it because you're good at it. So don't think about from the passion space, because that's harder for many people. Think from a space of just being really qualified and good at it. Are you in flow at 7 a.m. in the morning? That means you need a two-hour lead time to look at your power up, to power you up for 7 a.m., right? So that means even if you considered yourself an evening innovator because of your previous schedules, you have to slowly work yourself up to being able to get up at 5 o'clock. I suggest for people they do it in 15-minute increments to be successful and to be committed to consistency. So if you right now are getting up at 7, but you really do, you're someone like Denise who hits the floor running and you can go and you don't need coffee or, you know, any of that kind of slow growth stuff, you can just get into it, then maybe your power up needs to be pulled back. So just give yourself about 15 minutes tomorrow, just to wake up 15 minutes early, just to sit on the side of the bed and breathe. That's all you have to do. Just breathe. Breathe in and out slowly and deliberately to feel the breath of every single element of that's going in and that's coming out, filling your belly up with air, like feel it. And just do that for as much of that 15 minutes as you can and slowly ease into your day. And every other day, add 15 minutes. So you get up to having that 1 to 2 hours that you need to back up and have room for your power up. That's part of the challenge for many people is they don't have room for their routines. It's not enough time because everything is last minute. They hit the ground running. They don't pause. They don't stop. They don't do. And then they crash, and their whole night of sleep, whether it's 3 hours or 7 hours, is spent working in their head because they never turned off. All they did was turn it down just a little bit to close their eyes, but their minds never shut off because they didn't make room. So there's a whole bunch of techniques and strategies that honestly, depending on the custom challenge for the people that are dealing with it, we would work through that through the Dreamer's Blueprint that we do when they come in the door. And all of that will be ready in the next 2 weeks, which I'm excited about.
Yeah, I saw it on your website. It's coming soon. Listen, we're talking about people, they have to be willing to do this as well.
Yes.
What are you finding that the common denominator is when people say, I'm done, I can't do what I'm doing anymore, and now they're willing? Are there any kind of common stories that you're hearing?
Yeah, well, for many people, they're kind of sliding down. And you mentioned earlier, do you have to go through a breakdown to get to that point, right? They're on, think of a slide.
Yeah. I had to go through a head thumper. It was bad.
Right?
I was just exhausted. I was mad. I was mean. It wasn't pretty being around me. I didn't even want to be around me. But I had worn myself out. I mean, I think I blew through my adrenal glands. I'm not sure, but, man, I was unhappy.
No, it definitely happens like that for many, many people. And for some, if they're lucky, while they're on that slide of going down that breakdown, they're not at the bottom yet. They didn't hit anything. They, you know, bump their legs and their thighs up against some really hot metal on the side along the way, right? Like, it's not been an easy breakdown ride because you're breaking down. They're sliding down, and they're so afraid. They're trying to stop themselves along the way with different desperate acts, taking on different clients, adding one more thing to their schedule, taking things away, not making time for reconnecting with powerful people and their relationships and with their self and with others, their intimate partners and all that. All that stuff is stopping because they're so afraid of it. You have to let yourself slide down. That is the hardest thing for most people. There is something at the bottom, and it's not the rock bottom. It's your break open. So a lot of the common is when people have gotten to that place, and hopefully they have a coach or an advisor, and depending on what the dysfunction is, a counselor if necessary, they have someone that's right there on the side that isn't going to let them fall and bust their head open, But they're like, yep, right here is the space that you need to be so we can get to the other side. That break open space is where you get clarity. And for some, like myself, like yourself, when I finally let myself get there because I was so exhausted that I couldn't fight and keep stopping myself on the slide along the way, when I finally got there, I said, oh, that's what this is down here. This is what I needed to see. That is why I had so many problems along the way. These people need to be removed from my life. This place needs to be stopped. This other thing no longer fits in my life. That story doesn't serve me. And once I stewed in that space at the bottom of the slide for a while, got my clarity, figured out the lessons, made sure I paid attention to the environment and what was being told to me in my spirit, then I was ready to climb up and embrace the breakthrough that I was already having. And for many people, the commonality is they'll get to a space where they'll say out loud, oh, I'm stuck, I'm concerned, I have poor time management, I know I could do better. But then they will stop themselves, you know, that stopping along as they go down the slide, they'll stop themselves with, well, I don't have time to balance. I'm too busy building. I don't have time to take care of me. I have too many fires to put out. You know, they have these other commentary moments that are happening out loud, not just in their subconscious. They're saying this to other people, and they have the wrong people around them justifying it and saying, yeah, girl, I understand. I know. We don't have time for that. No, you don't have time for that, because when I end up in the hospital and I'm in the ICU for 2 weeks and no doctor can figure out what's wrong with me, who's stopping to come and be by my bedside? Nobody, because they are too busy keeping with the same not-so-healthy routines that they had. Meanwhile, all you needed was to literally pay attention to what was happening and get your clarity, but no one wants to stop and do that. They don't want to invest in having the right systems and people or services around them until they are below the break-open point. And they've passed it, they've skipped it, they haven't had an opportunity to embrace it, and now they're literally bleeding on the floor saying, okay, I need help. Why are you waiting to be bleeding on the floor to get help? Get help when you feel the cramp in your stomach. Get help a little bit earlier. Pay attention to your body and the signs and the people around you so you don't fall into a space that is very difficult and very expensive to get out of. And I mean that financially and in your time and your resources.
Absolutely. Listen, when I hit that point, and it was a number of years ago, but when I hit that point, I had a decision to move out of my kind of messy, emotional, emotion-based right brain, and I moved into my left brain, which is very clean, very analytical, and very linear, and I like it in there. And things changed big time. Once I said, I'm not going to make these silly emotional decisions, they don't serve me, and I started making rational, competent decisions deliberately, and, you know, accessing that part of my brain, I can't even begin to tell you how things changed for me, but it was a deliberate decision. And I had to box up a lot of crap and put it in the attic. You know, just
absolutely.
It's still there. If I need it, I can access it. And I don't mean that physically, although some of it did go in the attic. But, you know, if I need to go back and learn, you know, look at lessons learned, I can, but I'm not wallowing in it. And that was a big decision for me. But it changed me.
It started from a deliberate decision, and I want to highlight that.
Yeah.
You have to make a decision.
Yeah, what I was doing was not working. I mean, I was clocking along. I was making money. My business was growing. I was miserable, and I had to make that decision. And once I did, and, you know, it took a while to make that decision. There were events that happened and, you know, just all the different stuff that happens to us in life. But once I got there, I was like, geez, Denise, what took you so long, really? I mean, it was the right thing to do, but I had to, you know, get to that not breakdown point, but how did you say it, break open?
Yeah.
Like, oh, my gosh. You know, once I hit that, I was like, oh, I am so happy to be here.
Absolutely.
Well, listen, you have been a phenomenal guest, and I'm so glad that you were here with me today. Actually, we didn't get to talk about half the stuff I wanted to ask you about. So would you come back in the new year?
Absolutely. And this was a great, I love organic, slow conversations. These are the best, right? Like, Who knew we were going to go this way?
You don't ever know. And, you know, I get to learn. This is why I do what I do. Every Friday I get to meet the neatest people and learn, and you get to share your knowledge and wisdom with our audience. And it's just such a win-win for me and for everybody who's listening to us. But, Nikita, thank you so much for being with me here today. It has been wonderful chatting with you. And I know our audience enjoyed the takeaways as much as I did. And everybody, the show will be available for download in about 15, 20 minutes. And you can also find us in iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Nikita Thigpen. And I will see you next week. Nikita, quickly, before I end the show, tell people where to find you.
Oh, absolutely. The best place to connect with me is on LinkedIn under my name, Nikita Thigpen, or go to thigpearl.com and sign up so you can get the new information on the Dreamer's Blueprint in just a few weeks.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. I was honored. Thank
you.
You
can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.